Ray Bradbury, also a longtime part of the conference from the beginning. And he said you should write a story every week, because if you write a story every week, a short story every week, you can't, after a year, not have gotten better as a writer. So Steven Vessels talked about that. I think we both tried. I failed immediately. But what I was able to do was to do a story every month.
Welcome to Angle on Writing, a podcast about writing, publishing, and book marketing. Welcome, writers. I am here today with a very prolific short story writer, fiction writer, essay writer, multi-talented musician, painter, all sorts of things. Welcome, Max Talley.
Welcome, Lisa. Thank you for having me on your podcast. Do you call it a podcast?
Yes,
Okay, just
although
checking.
it may also appear on YouTube, so if you want to see the visual, head on over there.
Okay, so it's a video too.
So why don't you tell people a little about your background, how you got into writing? A little bird told me you actually have publishing in your blood.
My dad was a publisher for over 50 years, starting out in Signet Books way back and New American Library. And then he had little imprints in Penguin and New York Times Books and Dutton. And I think the last was St. Martin's Press. So the weird thing about that was that he wanted me to be an editor, he wanted me to be a publisher. And of course, I was a rebel. And I had wanted nothing to do with that. I thought publishing seemed really boring. So that's probably why I went toward music, why I went toward art, and a lot of other things before I got into writing. I mean, I always loved books. I always loved, but I didn't like the publishing side as much as the writing. The writing seemed fun to me. The publishing, and my dad was great at it, but it just seemed like, oh, you're the guy who presents the book as opposed to the person who creates it. So I always was more interested in the creative side. But I didn't get into, I took lots of literary courses, but I didn't get into writing itself until my mid-30s, because I was just too busy in bands and painting and other things. And then it just came to me, okay, I got to write a book. And I don't know why it came to me right then, but it just did. And then it's been waves. I wrote a book when I was 35. I got an agent right away, and he couldn't sell my book. He couldn't sell my second book. So around the year 2000, 2001 or two, I just sort of gave up on that, went back to music, went back to painting. And it wasn't until I went to the Writers Conference in 2005, the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, that I thought, okay, I'm going to start writing again. And I took it slow this time because I thought I'd failed at novels. So I went to short stories. And then I just slowly started writing short stories and then started getting them published as I went from, I don't know, 2007 to 2010, getting more stories published. Finally, around 2013, my dystopian science fiction novel, Yesterday We Forget Tomorrow, got picked up. And we were talking about Robin Gowan before. It was the same publisher that she had been published by, who no longer exist. So I guess I can name them Damnation Books. And that was fine to get published by them, and it was great. Except, like many small publishers, they were mismanaged, and I think the owners just suddenly disappeared. Publishing has all kinds of people, from the highest to the lowest.
But that book is still available.
I think there's a few copies in my attic. There's probably it's I think it's on Amazon, but it's one of those ones where it's officially out of print. But if you really look around, you can find it.
Do you think you might republish it at some point?
Yes, except I would have to rewrite it heavily because I wrote it in 2012 and it was about 2024. So the funniest thing in the book is that in 2012 I wrote that there would be a Governor Trump, and I handed it in and the editor said, "Are you sure you want to have this in? That's really far-fetched that he would be the governor of New York." And so things turned out much differently. So it just shows with dystopian fiction, you can imagine a world that's horrible, but not as horrible, not as bad as what actually happens. Sorry to get
So,
into politics there.
well, that's with dystopian fiction, you guys and politics, yes. So where did you go from there?
So from there, after that book, I thought, oh yeah, I published a book. Now everybody's going to want to publish my books. No. What people don't realize is it's not like you get your book accepted or your short stories accepted, and then suddenly you're in some exclusive club where everybody loves you. You go back. It's sort of like the myth of Sisyphus. You keep shoveling rocks. So it took years after that to get interest. I kept writing books. One of my biggest influences was something that Jack Kerouac said or did. It took him at least 6 years to get On the Road published. And in that time, he wrote all of his other major books. He wrote five other books during that time. So he didn't just sit around saying, "Oh, let my book be published." He just kept working and didn't get distracted. So that's what I did. I did a lot of writing and lots of short stories. Stephen Vessels, a beloved member of the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, had talked about, and of those, I don't know, 100 stories, 70 have been published. So that's what I was doing while I was waiting to get books published again. It took a long time, and then I think things kind of opened up a little bit in the 2020 area. More independent publishers, editors who were interested in what I was doing. I had crime books, I had literary fiction books, historical fiction, different type of things. So a lot of it is finding the editor who gets it.
As far as writing, though, so you go through different genres. So how do you feel? I mean, I write primarily historic fiction, and then I actually tried my hand at a little something that was kind of more exploratory, science fiction type of thing. I can't even remember the name of those subgenres. So how do you feel about going through different genres, writing them?
I love it. You have to be prepared to fail. I'll try anything pretty much, and with the realization it's not all going to work. But sometimes you surprise yourself. And I'm always amazed that people just write, romance or just write crime or just write this when they read much more widely than that. Most of us read different stuff. I read nonfiction, I read historical stuff about politics, about wars. So I could, it would take a lot of effort and a lot of research, but I could write nonfiction historical thing. Someday, maybe. But the thing about writing the short story every month was that I could experiment. And at the very worst, I lost a month. I would try something surreal, in the Kafka vein, characters turning into some other creature. And maybe it worked, maybe it didn't. And then I would go on and try something else. And I also like historical stuff. So I would experiment in those, and ones that failed, I would just not throw away or delete or put away. And the other ones I would send out and see if they got published. So doing the short story is a nice exploratory way. It's also a good way to find out if you have material for a novel. If you can write a few chapters kind of as a short story format, and then read them for your writer's group or send them out, and see what the reaction is. And sometimes people will say to you, this is really good. You should do more with this. And if you hear that from two or three people, then maybe it's time to invest more time into either a novella or a novel.
So how do you, so you've got all this material. How do you go about finding a place? I know when you teach, you try to help guide people
Right.
to where to submit.
It's a long process, you know, with writing. I think it's people think that writers just write a few hours and that it's an easy life, but you have to do a lot of research beyond the writing. There's various sites. There's Submittable, which lists a lot of places where you can submit to. There's a thing on Facebook called Submissions for Fiction. There's a place called Heavy Feather Review, which lists where to submit. There's the community of what is it? Little Magazines and Presses. It's called clmp.org. And they have a huge listing of places to submit to. So I have at least four or five giant places that I can look to. And you know, it takes time because you have to really research each one and not send the wrong material to the wrong place because they reject you very quickly. But it's, I think it's endurance. The thing is, a lot of writers need to be tougher. You're going to get rejected a lot of times. In the years that I've done this with all the stories and novels I've sent out, I think I have 2,000 rejections. So it's like, be prepared to be rejected. It's not the final word on your work, it's a subjective opinion. And yes, sometimes they're right. You need to improve your work, but a lot of times it means you just need to direct your submission somewhere else to the right place. I don't think we're at a time where there's sort of one emperor or empress who knows everything and says, this is good, this is bad. It's very subjective. So the main thing is endurance and just a shotgun approach, sending your material out to as wide you know, as wide a an array of places as you can.
Yeah, I tell people just not just with their writing, because writing and also marketing your book, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So
Yes.
I say
And
that.
you're hoping, you know, with submissions, one at, let's say 15 rejections per story, a lot of people, after three rejections, they give up. But if I, you know, a lot of times it's between the 10th and 15th place I send to where I get the, you know, acceptance. With books that could be even longer, I remember there was someone at the conference. He had a book called, what was it, 40 Years Stoned? And he was a great guy. And I think he got accepted on his 150th, sending the book out. So imagine if you were doing that, I would have stopped at 100. And I can take rejection, but he went to
Yeah.
150 and it worked out for him. So really, you have to do that. And as you know, with marketing and press, trying to get like a review, trying to get a newspaper coverage, you're lucky just to get a response from 1 out of 10 saying, I'm vaguely interested, or this isn't something I do. Most of them just ignore it. So you have to have that kind of a maximalist approach of just sending lots of stuff out there.
Do you have, by chance, maybe not one you got yourself, maybe one just you heard, but do you have a favorite rejection?
Oh, well, there was various ones. I mean, there was one that I think I posted once on social media, where it said that this is just a phenomenal, you know, it went on and on about how good it was and then said, but it's wrong for our journal. And then I always think, like, you know, the guy's like, this is the best story I've read this year and that kind of thing. But, you know, we have to have a philosophical question within our stories, and your story doesn't have a philosophical question. My feeling is, if they like your story that much, I think they should bend a little. But what you
Yeah.
find is so many journals have a very narrow corridor of what they want. You know, it has to be historical fiction from the 18th century that takes place in London. You know, they have all these little rules, and you'd think they would just want something good, but unfortunately, things have become much more specific and specialized.
Yeah. I know in your workshops, you try to focus on writers the first three pages. Can you talk about that, about why the first three pages are important?
It's because I've done some work in literary journals, being a reader, reading manuscripts, reading short stories that have come in. And what I've learned from the editors in chief and stuff like that is they only read at the most three pages, right? Often just the first page of a short story or of an essay. Or, if you're lucky with a book, they might read 50 pages. And that's if they like the idea of the book. If they don't, they're just going to read the your query letter and just say, this isn't something for us. So doing the first three pages is ensuring that there's a sense of excitement, that something's going to happen, that there's conflict. And people say, well, I don't. You know, I write memoir, or I write historical fiction. There's no car explosions. There doesn't have to be car explosions. It just has to be a sense of conflict and tension, that characters want something, that there's people blocking them from getting what they want. You know, there has to be a sense of something's going to happen. It can't just be window dressing. It can't just be characters agreeing with each other. There was one story where it was set in, I don't know, 19th century London, and the character's talking to her butler. It's a beautiful day. And the butler's like, yes, it's a beautiful day. It's so good to live in London. Yes, it's so good to live in London. And they're just agreeing with each other. And the dialogue just, there was no reason for any of it. So a lot of it is just getting people to understand that editors are besieged with material, and they're not going to take the time. John Reed, who teaches Pirate Workshop at the Santa Barbara Writers Conference, has a joke where he says, oh yeah, this thing really gets going around page 257. And it's like, nobody's gonna read to 257. So the idea is working on the first three pages is that they won't put the thing down, that they will get through to the rest of your story. So that's what you're doing, is you're trying to win over people. And it's sad that you have to do that, because there are some great writers who have very slow builds. And I think if you have a reputation, and once you're published a bunch, you can get away with that more. But we're at a time where people want to be interested and intrigued and sucked into a story very quickly.
So I know with novels throughout, the 30 years that I've been paying attention, prologues have come in and out of popularity. How do you feel about prologues?
I generally avoid them, but if you do them, I would do it pretty short. Two or three pages in italics, I guess, to say that this is a prologue and not the beginning of the book. I think some people will skim over a prologue because they'll say, well, this isn't the real story. When does the story start? I mean, that's the new reader. I think you can go back, of course, to like older writers, whether it's Dickens or Thackeray or whatever, who've done really long prologues, and they make it work. I think you can make it work, but it's tougher, especially if you're submitting your book to an editor, to get them to read through, say, 50 pages of italics, just waiting for the actual story and the characters to like begin. So I would think if you can shorten a prologue, or have a few pages in the very beginning of the book, and then if you need to have more prologue material later in the book, but long prologues can be kind of a mood killer for
Yeah.
editors, at least. So,
Yes.
but again, you're talking about historical fiction being the thing that you write in, and it's often important in that. It also seems to be important in books that take place in two different times. So we're talking about characters in the 20th century, but they're referring back to their ancestors. There's a book by Ken Kesey, Sometimes a Great Notion, and it starts out in the present and then it goes back in italics. So you can do anything you want, but just understand that if you're not a well-known writer and you're trying to sell your book, it's going to be a little bit more difficult.
Definitely. That's great advice. Do you have any other advice, anything that you really wish writers knew before they come? You're going to be teaching in June, and so is there anything you really wish writers knew before they came to your class?
Well, coming to my class, the one thing I'm not really doing now is memoir. And, I do science fiction, crime fiction, essay. And a lot of people say, well, isn't memoir and essay the same thing? Well, it's not really. Essay is more like Joan Didion or Tom Wolfe or, Hunter Thompson. You're writing about something else, even though you might be in it. You are the writer, but you're dealing with something else when you're writing an essay. With memoir, it's strictly about your life, the people in your life. And I don't read a lot of memoir, so I feel like I'm not qualified to say this is a good memoir, this is a bad one. So that's why I avoid it. I've done it. Once in a while people come in and I don't say like get the heck out of here. If they bring it in, but I'm much better at fiction and essay, historical fiction, science fiction, literary fiction. So that's one thing I would say. The other thing I would say to people coming to conferences and who are talking to editors and trying to pitch their books is always have more than one idea, more than one book. And you might say, well, how do I can't write two or three books. Well, I mean, have 20 pages of another book so that when the editor or agent says to you, well, that's interesting, but I don't do that kind of thing. Do you have anything else? Always have something else, even if it's just an idea or a few pages, because there's a lot of editors who will be interested in your writing, but not the genre that you might be writing your main book in. And I was one of those people who flogged my first book over and over, the dystopian science fiction. And of course, there's lots of editors who didn't want that. And they always would say to me, don't you have anything else? And I would say, no. So I learned to always have something else, even if it was just 20 pages of something that I could hand them and then quickly go home and write more if they were interested in it.
That is wonderful advice. And I know from sitting in workshops that you always have very valuable feedback to give writers. You're a very astute at critique. So I do know that.
Thanks. I'm lucky to have people who've come over and over to my workshops who are also very good at that too.
And you are currently promoting a book right now, aren't you?
I am promoting Peace, Love, and Hate. Does this come out backwards, or is that just what I'm seeing?
I think that's good. Yeah.
Okay. Good. And so it's being sold as a crime novel, but I kind of think of it as historical fiction, literary fiction mixed with crime, because it's very much about the place, about 1969 in Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco and everything that was going on there. So there is crime, but there's also the hippies, the cults, the protests, the communes. It's everything that was going on at that time. And it's specifically the last 6 months of 1969, because things got darker then. What with the Charles Manson murders and the Manson family, and then you had the Altamont rock concert, and so there's various things that where the 60s seemed a darker side of the 60s was showing. So that helped me write the crime thing. I could have written sort of a 1967 happy hippie novel, but I just chose to do this because I thought it would be fun.
Yeah, sounds like it. Yeah.
I certainly, it's not a what I would call a bestseller, but it's my best-selling book. So I've been lucky. I've gotten press on this one. What I've learned from it is that if you have a book set in California, in San Francisco, and has chapters in Santa Cruz, you can get coverage from those places. You can contact those stores in those places, and they'll stock your book. That was a big learning thing, is when you have a book set in a state or a town, you can reach out to bookstores, you can reach out to the little weekly magazines and weekly newspapers and tell them, I featured Santa Cruz in two chapters, and two newspapers in Santa Cruz, the Santa Cruz Sentinel and then Lookout, which is sort of like our independent, both did articles on it. So that was my learning experience from this, that if you set things in a specific space and different area, different towns, you can sort of focus on those bookstores and those media press, whatever press is left, and hope that they'll feature you.
Well, that's great. That's a really great book marketing tip there. Thank you for that. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Sure.